Fan Run Radio podcasters, many of you have been asking for a way to support the station if you live out of state and can't support our sponsors, and now there's a way. Just go to shopfanrun.com and buy a shirt, or two, or ten, and know that you're supporting the station that does our best to support you. Shopfanrun.com.
We kick off hour number two of the program, this segment brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out, and you can work out absolutely free at Gold's Gym a couple different ways. You can just walk in the day after Thanksgiving through that Sunday, Black Friday, Saturday, Sunday, work out for free, just walk in. That's all you gotta do. Any Gold's Gym. And then anytime, if you just go to the website, goldsgym.com, and download the free 3-day VIP pass, you can work out for free and try it out before you join. It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Going into break, I mentioned the SEC East, and I always like to do this. We did it when there was no clear leader in the SEC East, when Butch Jones, Kirby Smart, and Jim McElwain had a chance to take over the SEC East, and no one really did it at first in Kirby's first year. Obviously, Georgia has risen to the top now and has control over it. But a win over Missouri, and if you beat Missouri, surely you can beat Vanderbilt. Maybe you don't.
I would think so.
But surely you can. And surely you have a great shot. And if you do beat both those teams, you have immediately, in 1 year, gone right back to where people can make the case that you're second or third in the SEC East. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that if you finish off with these two wins, that there will be some people next year that are like, yep, it's Georgia, probably Florida, and I'm putting Tennessee right back up at third. And you've automatically, in 1 year, put all those teams that don't have Tennessee resources below you in the pecking order through 1 year of a new coach, a new, you know, program, essentially.
I would say there will be some who probably think Tennessee is second.
Like, yeah. No, I think you can make a case for it easily.
Especially if they beat Missouri, considering what Missouri did to Florida 2 weeks ago.
And obviously there's bowl games and the other teams finish. But I think you'll have Georgia, who's at a playoff or almost playoff level, and then you'll be top of the heap with everybody else. You'll be right there in it. You know, I mean, it will be a road game at Florida next year. That's always going to be tough no matter what. But it's not like there's this gap you can just look at these programs and see. Because as you mentioned, Florida hasn't been – I mean, they've been kind of weird this year too. And Missouri, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, they just – they're all in the same mode of, yeah, there are days where you can play those teams, and if they play really well, they are tough to beat. It's not your dad's SEC East. It just isn't anymore. Like, if you go on the road at Vanderbilt and they play really well, I mean, they can beat any team outside of a team at the level of, like, Georgia this year. Mm-hmm. It's just different than it was, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
I guess the question is, like, can Tennessee be the team to create the second tier first? Because it is Georgia, and really it's kind of Georgia and everybody else, maybe with the exception of Vanderbilt. But can Tennessee create another tier where it's like, it's Georgia, it's Tennessee, it's these teams, and then there's Vanderbilt, at least in the East? Like, that's the question for me. I don't think you're going to catch Georgia in one recruiting class, and I'm counting this one as his first kind of full one that you've had a year to put together. Although last year's has proved that even with limited time, they can put together a class and get some guys who can really help you out. But that's the question for me. If that's true, and I'm with you, can they not only be there with and surpass, but can they kind of distance themselves from the South Carolinas, Missouris, Kentuckys, and Floridas? You know, and be there as the, well, right now they're definitely the clear number two. Because if you're the clear number two, you've probably got a shot at beating the number one,
right,
and catching them quickly. I mean, obviously a lot of this has to do with how does South Carolina do on the recruiting trail. I think Missouri's in big trouble once Drew Locke leaves. That's just me. We will see. Florida, I mean, if Florida gets a transfer at quarterback that's any good, that kind of scares me. If they have to trot out Franks all year again, not so much.
Yeah.
And I would imagine Dan Mullen's going to be entering the transfer sweepstakes if he can to try to go get, a Kelly Bryant or Jalen Hurts. I was talking to a Florida buddy about this yesterday. He just seems like the kind of guy who would try to go get one of those dudes and say, yeah, got our quarterback now, and you can come in and play 2 years and yada, 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 and we've got all this and blah, 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 blah.
It's by no means official, but you mentioned Kelly Bryant. I've seen a lot of people say that he'll end up at Arkansas.
I've seen that too. That'd be a really interesting move for Kelly Bryant because obviously he would go there and be in a familiar system, and I think he'd play well, but you're still at Arkansas. They still don't stop anybody. Obviously, it's a big step down. I mean, anywhere from Clemson is going to be, but that would be a strange move for him. He could probably go somewhere and actually win some games.
I do think at Arkansas, he would at least be able to show enough to NFL people, which is probably what he's thinking about.
No, I agree with that. He's just not going to win as much. That's all I'm
right.
saying.
Inconsistency is the main word that comes to mind when I think about all those teams that we're talking about right now, Kentucky, mm-hmm. Missouri, South Carolina. Vanderbilt's not really inconsistent. I just think their talent level is just not even as good as those other three at the moment. And definitely not as good as Tennessee, who I would throw in that same. There's really four teams right now that I think it's Missouri, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Kentucky. I think if you played a round robin with those teams and just kept playing games, you could get all kind of outcomes with those four teams, all different directions. And I think there's two different ways, obviously, that you can elevate yourself out of that group on a consistent basis. One is just start out recruiting those teams.
Sure.
And it seems like Jeremy Pruitt's already doing that. We know Tennessee spends more money than all those schools. Tennessee has better facilities, if you kind of grade them all, than all those schools.
Yes.
A better fan base than all those schools. Like, that's why.
Or you're at least, there's no distinguishable gap. Like, you're not the number one in facilities, but it's not like, but you're so far behind this. You're right there at the top of all these categories.
So, I mean, Tennessee has at least a slight edge globally with all of that stuff. Like, it's just a better mm-hmm. place. It's a better history. So you have that built in. If you get a coaching staff that knows how to recruit to Tennessee, and I think they're learning. I think all the traction you have with big 4- and 5-star guys right now, despite it being Pruitt's first kind of rebuilding year, I think bears that out already, that you have guys that can recruit. So to beat those teams consistently, you either have to have players that are just better than those other teams so that when you don't play your best game but the other team kind of does, you still win a close one. And when you both play even, you win going away because you're just more talented. And then there's the coaching acumen of both staffs. And how do they game plan? And how do they get ready? And that goes back to Jeremy Pruitt making those halftime adjustments the way they do. It's fun. I don't think the coaching level at any of those places is as good as I think, despite the fact that Georgia has better players than Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt, or Missouri right now, I think their coaching is also slightly better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Tennessee's coaching can be slightly better than Will Muschamp to me on defense is probably pretty similar to some of the Tennessee guys on defense. The problem is, or what should be the problem for South Carolina, and you want to make it their problem, is at Tennessee you should be able to have better offensive mind. You should be able to pay your guys more, as they are. You should be able to develop a better staff, and I hope that that is also happening in addition to this recruiting traction. And if you get both those things, if you have slightly better coaching and slightly better players, then you can consistently beat those teams year in, year out. Obviously, in today's college football, I do feel like there's more parity. You might have one of those slip-up games every once in a while against that level of team. But if you start consistently beating those teams, then when you play whoever's in the Georgia slot, mm-hmm. right, if you're second and you win that game, all of a sudden you're set up to go to Atlanta. Or, obviously, with a few more years, you can just be that team if you once you've developed the talent level to be at the top of the division. And that's hopefully where we're headed. I know we kind of argued about this with the Florida game. A win over Missouri tomorrow or a loss isn't really going to matter once you get to a championship season later down the road where your team is rebuilt to the point where you can make a run at a championship. But a win or loss tomorrow will help your fan base feel better about the direction. It may help a little bit of the short-term momentum on the recruiting trail, although that's not everything. It's a very small variable in this whole
It's always good for the
scheme.
Visitors to have the crowd stay around and celebrate a win. Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you.
We talked about Kirby Smart after year one. People are like, yeah, I don't know. And then year two even, which was pretty sudden, all of a sudden they're good. So, you know, it's not everything, but a win tomorrow could start signaling that, you know what, Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee is at least kind of back to where we should be better than you guys most years, and give us another recruiting class cycle, and we're probably going to be consistently beating your ass again.
That'll be nice.
I mean, that's the goal, right? You look at the rankings right now in recruiting. I mean, Tennessee's ahead of every SEC East team except for Georgia.
And
that's without any of these guys.
I don't want to. Well, if you steal a guy or two, you might be within striking distance of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all about the players, right? Like, you have to be able to recruit at an extremely high level, especially at a place like Tennessee. And I say recruit at a high level, and what I mean by that is you have to go to places where you're not the state team, right? Where you're not the favorite, and pull guys out. You know, if you're in Gainesville and you're Dan Mullen, you don't have to travel far to find a bunch of really talented players who want to play for Florida, who are from Florida. And you know, I mean, it's easier. At Tennessee, you have to be a coaching staff that's willing to go, obviously, to Georgia, obviously to Florida, you know, North Carolina, Virginia. But you're seeing it already. Like, they're trying to get into Texas and California, New Jersey. I mean, you have to be able to do that. If this staff, and so far so good, I mean, they're at least getting them on campus, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they can prove this year, next year, and beyond that they're not only capable of getting these kids to campus, of getting, you know, interest, but also ultimately signing a handful of these true difference-making type players, that's the recipe for long-term success in this league. Now, there are other leagues where you can coach them up and have a crazy system. In this league, it is tough to win divisions, conference championships, without having elite players. I mean, Missouri, when they first came into the conference, they were different, right? Defense was pretty good. Offense was spread. It was all over the place. What happened when they got to the SEC championship? They got throat punched.
Yeah.
I mean, look at McElwain at Florida. You kind of backed into it twice. You did it with decent defense and kind of gimmicky offense and, you know, weird stuff, and you got throat punched twice. Like, you have to be able to get to an SEC championship game and then have the players to compete. You can't back your way into it and win it in this league. It just doesn't happen. Players like Eric Gray, like Wanya Morris, like Darnell Wright, like all the guys that Ryan Callahan talked to us about on Wednesday, those are the type of players that come in here that develop. And I think already with the development I've seen from last year's team and obviously the freshmen, you feel good about getting those guys and having the majority of them pan out. That has not been the case at Tennessee for a long time. Far too many 4- and 5-star players with a lot of fanfare, hype, and high ranking have come in here and kind of disappeared. I don't expect that to happen anymore as long as you can get them. The question is, can they get them? So far, so good. And if they close the way a lot of people are kind of thinking they might, yeah, man, this thing might get ready to pop off in a big way. And I'm saying that, you know, with tempered expectations, but it's hard to not feel pretty good right now about the direction. And I'm with you, like, what happens tomorrow doesn't really matter. What happens against Vanderbilt doesn't really matter. Obviously, if you finish 7-5, man, that's going to be a feather in Pruitt's cap, right? That's going to be we took a 4-18 and we were 3 points from 8-4. You know, if they win the bowl game and they go 8-5 or something, I mean, that's big. But I think you're already seeing, I don't want to say the foundation because that was Butch's word. You're already seeing kind of the structure underneath that it's going to work. It's all about getting the players. And a lot of that's luck, right? I mean, you've got to have an Owen Popo say, sorry, Auburn, I'm going to Tennessee last minute. You've got to have a Darnell Wright say, sorry, Ohio State and Alabama, I like Wanya Morris and I'm going to go to Tennessee. You've got to have a couple of those things go your way early, and then you've got to prove it on the back end with coaching. I've already seen the coaching enough to think, yeah, this is going to work. I'm not saying they're perfect, but I think it's going to work. Now, if you can get some of those players where coaching matters, but it's a little different when you send, you know, a guy like Owen Papo on a blitz and a guy like Colton Jumper on a blitz, right?
Right. Yeah, and I find it fascinating that, you know, you've got Saban, you've got Smart, you've got Pruitt now. I mean, to some degree, you know, Muschamp, all these guys that came from like the same, at least, especially defensive family. I noticed on the game the other day, Georgia sending in a defensive hand signal, like for I think it's just a formation hand signal. So it's not even something you like hide. I mean, it does, you know.
Yeah.
Alabama used the exact same hand motion in one of their games that I noticed, and it's the exact same one that Tennessee uses too. So like these guys aren't even bothering.
Is it this one?
To check? No, it was the it was like the money, like double handed money.
Love the double handed money.
They're not even bothering to change the terminology, the signals. That, I mean, and why would you care? You know, when it's something that once the guys run on the field, everybody knows what it is. So it's going to be interesting to me. Do these Saban disciples just try and recreate kind of Saban style program?
Man,
and then,
wouldn't you? Like, wouldn't you?
Yeah, obviously. And then just try and beat him at his own game, or do, you know, at some point, like how do you take him down, or do you just try and be as good as you can, and then once he fades away, then you can kind of step into the void. But, I mean, we're going to get to see it as Georgia takes on Alabama again, and we're going to get to see kind of Pruitt, who's, what is he, 2-3 years behind Smart, you know. It's like they're just kind of catching up, like trying to do it the same way and install the same stuff. I mean, we've even heard that, you know, when Pruitt got here, they're just filling three-ring binders with all the stuff he loves from Alabama and all the stuff he loved when he did at Georgia, and that's your Tennessee defense.
I like it. I like it, right? I mean, it's easy enough.
Well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I've always said, absolutely. In sports or business, if you're not sure what to do, if you have a decision to make and you're just, you know, it's not one of your big priorities, it's just something that has to be decided on, look at the industry leader and just do it the way
they do it.
Right? I mean, there's everybody kind of has their own stuff that they want to make a priority, that they want to make their own. But if you're not sure, just, you know, copy them. And when you've worked for that entity,
yeah. I mean, he's been around easy enough to see
a few different ideas,
right, but also kind of realize, yeah, this way is the best. I like this way, but I also like what we did here. I like this from Florida State. I like this at Georgia. Yeah, I mean, take 80% from Bama, because obviously that's the gold standard. Take the 10% you like from Florida State, the 10% you like from Georgia, roll it all together, marry it, and then you've got Tennessee's, you know, game plan, so to speak, for the next, you know, hopefully long time, hopefully 10, 15 years.
And then you learn, yeah, you might learn.
And then develop as you go, obviously.
A little different, yeah, some stuff that works, especially when recruiting, because places are different, some stuff you could sell at Tennessee that maybe you didn't have. You know, maybe it's, hey, you know, come to this actual city. It's pretty cool. You know,
yeah.
You don't want to go to Auburn. It's just
might be working. Grass. That might be working right now, with Papa.
Let's hope so. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Football Friday edition of the program. It's a pretty crappy week in the SEC.
Yep.
I'm really glad Tennessee has a game that I will be, you know, tuned in for every snap on. Tennessee was playing Charlotte this week. I don't know.
I'd gone fishing.
Might just go camping or hiking or something.
Yeah.
The big one this week, ABC, 8:00, UCF.
Even the big game is not big.
Awful. Come on. I mean. I guess you got to throw them the token college game day, the whatever.
But yeah, they always go to one of the, you know, the little guys this time of year.
Mm-hmm. So it's just a pretty bad slate. You can't watch Mike Leach at 10:30 on ESPN as they host Arizona. One win out from heading into the Apple Cup with only one loss and a chance to play in the Pac-12 championship game. Iowa State and Texas is one of the few games where both teams are ranked in the top 20, and it's only on the Longhorn Network. That's the type of weekend you have this
Great.
Weekend. Wonderful programming decisions from from the Big 12.
Fantastic.
Yeah. LSU takes on Rice, Oklahoma, Kansas. Clemson hosts Davies Dukies, Washington, Oregon State.
I think don't ever say Davies Dukies again.
Georgia, UMass.
The line's like 28.5. I think Duke will cover.
Michigan, Indiana. These are just all the ranked teams that are playing. Boston College at Florida State, because that's the one you want to tune into. BC still ranked. I don't know why. West Virginia doesn't go on the road to Oklahoma State. That's a pretty interesting one. That's a 3:30 ABC kickoff as Mike Gundy tries to play spoiler from here on out. They're 2-5 in the Big 12. But I kind of feel like Oklahoma State could beat most teams in the country. Maybe not the top 5 or 6. But like outside of that, I feel like Oklahoma State would be a team no one wants to play. It's weird. I guess the one everybody will have their eyes on, Syracuse and Notre Dame, NBC, 2:30 kickoff from Yankee Stadium.
Yankee Stadium, huh?
Does Dino Babers pull it off, Houston? Notre Dame is a 10.5-point favorite. Syracuse is ranked 12th. Notre Dame, number 3 in the country.
I think Syracuse will cover the 10.5, you said? 10.5?
Yeah.
I think they'll cover that, but I don't know. I really don't know what to expect from Notre Dame on a week-in and week-out basis.
I don't think I've watched more than 4
plays I don't think they're elite, but I do give them credit because I do think if there are tiers in college football, they are firmly on the second or third tier. However, it seems like it's Alabama, Clemson, and then you start to fill in, you know, 5 or 6 teams there. They're definitely within that 5 or 6. Their schedule sets up to a point where, you know, they can make a run at it, and they have, to their credit. I also just don't know. Like, I think they caught Michigan at the perfect time. If those two teams played right now, I'd probably take Michigan. I think I would take Georgia over Notre Dame. But I don't know enough about Syracuse to say, yes, Syracuse can definitely beat Notre Dame. Syracuse did play well at Clemson. They also played well because Kelly Bryant was leaving, and they knocked Trevor Lawrence out of the game.
Yeah.
So Clemson was scrambling a little bit there in that one, and Syracuse was able to keep it close and almost win it. But I don't know. I don't know what to think about this one. It's at Yankee Stadium?
Yankee Stadium.
You know, I'll be honest, that helps me lean towards Notre Dame. If Syracuse was at home and they were on their grass, I'd feel pretty good about it. Notre Dame used to some cold weather, used to playing on the real grass. Syracuse, if this was in the Carrier Dome, I'd think probably yes. Yankee Stadium, I don't know. I don't like this setup. I think this will be an ugly, ugly, nasty football game. What's the weather like in New York this weekend? Any idea? Is it supposed to like snow 5 feet on this game?
That's weird. Normally you have a little weather blur about beside this game, but
because
Syracuse like needs the weather off the board.
Syracuse needs like perfect weather.
High of 48, looks sunny.
Yeah.
Low
perfect
of 36.
Weather. That's football weather right there.
All right. Okay.
It's
well,
snowing
good.
Today, but tomorrow.
Wet field. Not good. I don't know.
This was a Notre Dame home game, though, so it's actually better, I think.
Yeah, Notre Dame
versus Syracuse
like,
than
when they went to Ireland or whatever. Cool. I hate Notre Dame. I'm so over Notre Dame. I would love Syracuse to win and just knock them right out, but whatever. We don't always get what we want, do we?
That's true. I have to tell my kids that often. I'm glad you've learned that lesson. You had a birthday recently, so you've matured.
I am. I'm very mature now.
Yeah. That's
exactly what it is.
Well, that's the only drama on the schedule. It really is. Like, there's that game, and there's the Tennessee game. And
yeah.
And that's it. And maybe, just maybe, one of us pulls an SEC Survivor helmet from one of – well, I think there's only one game that's actually slotted to be close. And it's not even fun. It's like the whoever Vanderbilt's playing. Vanderbilt and Ole Miss. That's it.
I'll draw Missouri.
Think so?
Yeah.
Nah, I don't know.
Now that you've said it, you totally won't. You just ruined it. Unless he does, then it'd be kind of cool.
It'd be funny then.
Yep, bad week. Bad week of games. It is what it is.
It's a setup week, I guess.
Yep, it's I don't know. I'm just looking at these schedules. Like, what on earth? I guess Tennessee got, you know, Charlotte 2 weeks ago to kind of prep their last few games. But everybody else getting these cupcakes right before, you know, a big game. don't know, maybe Charlotte came at the right time. I'd love to have Charlotte before South Carolina. That would have been ideal, but we, again, don't always get what we want. But, yeah, is this good? Like, is this week good for the SEC as a whole? Like, is this week the strongest argument for a 9-game conference schedule?
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, this is the one where, I mean, this is, like, it's crunch time. This is when all eyes are on college football, or they should be. And the SEC really doesn't have a meaningful game going on as far as, you know, national championship playoff implications. That's a bad look, I think. Now, I don't think the SEC has a scheduling problem. I think they schedule well. Alabama, I mean, you scheduled Louisville this year. They happen to be terrible. That's not your fault. Tennessee going to get West Virginia. Nice job. Ole Miss went and got Texas Tech. LSU got Miami. Like, the SEC is scheduling, and the big dogs are scheduling well. But this week, can they flip some stuff to where it's not all of your good teams in the same week? Like, does it have to be that Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, Florida have this game this week? I mean, hell, even Kentucky, like, they're playing Middle Tennessee State. Like, what do you, like, to get ready for Louisville? That game bounces around a lot. Like, that would have been a good early season game this year. I just don't like that we have this week. You kind of expect it in week two of the season, but it's football and you've been waiting on it for 8 months, so you really don't care. You just want football. Give me football. I don't care who we play. At this point, though, there's too much to decide still to have this week of games. And, again, there's too much interest. Like, this is the week that the SEC could be stealing all the eyeballs across the country, and instead people are going to be – well, I guess there aren't that many good games at all, but it just seems like, man, this would be a good week to showcase the league or something. 9 conference games, you think? Go for it?
I mean, I'm for it. I don't – I know everybody thinks, oh, it's the SEC, you can't play another conference game, but, I mean, if you're – maybe it's just because we're we're Tennessee. We already play Alabama every year, so one – more conference, you already play Georgia every year. One more conference game. Yeah, I mean, some years it could be the, I guess there are some years where you might be missing one of the next teams in the list of how strong the teams are. But most of the time at Tennessee, you're going to be playing a mid to bottom half of the conference out of the whole 14 team is your one extra game. And it just will help everyone else have to play a schedule that's a little more comparable to yours. And it definitely would help with this kind of garbage. I mean, the schedule next year, for example, is a lot better for Tennessee's chances to win games and you know, have a better year. It's got the double bye built in. But if you're looking
Everyone's does, to be fair.
Right. If you're looking at the home schedule, though, like there's a home game against Vanderbilt to end the season. But before that, like there's this huge lull in the schedule where there's not a really a good home game at all. So, I mean, if you just could pull out Charlotte, that game, not necessarily that slot this year, but that game, and put in, you know, I mean, anybody.
Arkansas.
That'd be fine.
I would feel a lot like playing Charlotte, but at least it's a conference game. I don't know. This is just, it's just one of those weeks. Like, it's bad. There's not a lot to break down nationally because I suppose a lot of teams are doing this. Thank God for the Big 12. They're at least trying, right? Like, they're going to play a couple of meaningful games this week. We appreciate it. West Virginia at Oklahoma State, I'll take it. That's a good one. But, I mean, SEC, not so much. And this is, again, the time of year when you probably should be doing that.
Did you hear what Saban said about it's almost like he got some Alabama guy to ask him this question. I'm not sure if that happened or if it's kind of a polar opposite thing. Either he wanted someone to ask him this so he could talk about it, or it was probably the last thing he wanted asked because his response, he was asked if he was surprised that outsiders question how he manages situations with his program. Which on the one hand,
is this in
this was his
regard to him playing and starting Tua this
week?
Yeah. Okay.
On the one hand, like, it does seem dumb if you're talking about people actually thinking it will matter what they think and if it'll affect him. I get that that's preposterous. Like, you know, he's Nick Saban. He's won a bunch of national championships. Like, obviously what some guy writes in the paper or says on the radio or a fan posts on a message board isn't going to affect his decision-making. Obviously, that's true. But then on the flip side, you're the most successful coach right now. Everyone's going to be talking about your team. Like, you should see that as a good thing. Like, I would think that Jeremy Pruitt likes the fact that so many people are fans of Tennessee and want to talk about Tennessee football, that they do it. But Saban almost took it as, like, he has to listen. Like, the two things are completely separate. It's very strange. Because he answered the question, I don't really. I haven't heard anything in terms of what I'm being challenged on, but I'm sure that I am. But I would, like, he's not really challenged on anything. Like, no one's like, his AD is not calling him saying, Saban, I'm challenging you. You really should sit Tua. That's really the smarter thing. I know more football than you. No one's saying that. It's just commentary. It's sports.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be entertainment. He's like making this into something that it's not. He said, but I'm sure that I am, but I would really rather not know, because everybody's got the right to their opinion, whatever it is, what should or shouldn't be. I kind of have my opinion based on the experience through the years. Like, yeah, we know, and that's all that really matters. And we have an opinion as a staff on as to what's best to build our program. He goes through some more coach speak, but here's the gist of it. He said, well, if we didn't play Tua in this game, we'd be sending a message to every good player that we have that they shouldn't play in the game. So eventually, why should we even play? Why not just forfeit so nobody gets hurt? Take a loss. Just be done with it. Or is it an opportunity for everybody to improve and grow and challenge themselves to get better? So we go out and execute as a team and build a little momentum through the week and the game, so maybe we play better in the next game. So that's what we believe. Nick Saban's the biggest hypocrite. He takes Tua out every fourth quarter. Why didn't he take all his good players out? Like, this is complete BS. This is just complete hypocrisy. He's trying to give justification for this one way that makes absolutely no sense based on his behavior in other games.
I mean, he starts Tua in the other games. He just pulls him when the game's out of hand.
Yeah, but his justification for why he can't sit him in this game is that he can't sit everybody. He'd be sending a message.
I think Saban's right here. I think he's just saying, yeah, he's a little bit banged up, but he's our starter. He's going to start the game. I mean, clearly he's not going to throw him out there on one leg with a torn ACL. I mean, clearly the guy's at least healthy enough to play, and Saban's just saying, if you're healthy enough to play and you're the starter, we're going to play you, you're going to start, and then we'll assess from there and make a decision. Now, if he gets hurt, Saban will look like an idiot. If he goes out there and throws four touchdowns, he'll sit down. He's right. Like, everyone else can have their opinion, but that's his philosophy. And, man, it's hard to knock Nick Saban's philosophy. It's worked so much. We're just looking for anything to, like, hammer Nick Saban on. And there are things that you can, but, like, the guy ultimately has all the answers. Yeah, I mean, Tua might go out there and get hurt, or he might not. And if he doesn't, like, all of this conversation for the last week has been pointless because Nick Saban, again, will have been right. But, I mean, he's just saying he's the starter. He's healthy enough to play. We're going to play him. He didn't say he's going to play him for four quarters. And, I mean, he's not dumb enough, Nate, that he's going to play all of his starters for four quarters in blowout games. I mean, he's going to manage the game. He's just saying, I'm not going to just sit a player to make sure he doesn't get hurt.
His justification, though, is just wrong here. Like, I don't understand why he would say it that way. If he said it the way you just said it, it would make perfect sense.
But that's what he's saying.
No, he tried to make it into something more than it's not. Like they've already sent the message that Tua is more important than other starters, because he absolutely is. He's the quarterback.
But they don't just sit Tua. Like, they bring in backups at a lot of other positions too.
Not that many. I mean, they're starting offensive line was out there like for the last snap of some random game where they were up 40. Like, it's okay to just admit you handle your quarterback differently.
Well, I mean, I think he would admit that. He's just saying not in the way where you don't play in a game that we're going to win anyway. That's all he's – I mean, guys, Tua might get one series.
Yeah.
He might get two, and then he might come out. But Saban's just saying, I'm not going to just completely put a guy on the shelf because he might get hurt for an entire game, I mean.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously, if this was Auburn, he's going to play him, right? So he's just saying the opponent doesn't really dictate – how we manage our football team. The score in the game can dictate that, but we're not going to go into a game and say, because we're playing opponent Y, here's how we manage the roster in this game. He's just saying we're going to let the score and the game itself dictate how we manage players. Tua gets up by 28 in the first quarter, yeah, he's probably going to sit down. But until then, We're Alabama. Makes me sick, but that's just what he's saying.
I guess for me, maybe it's semantics. Maybe just the way he explained it made no sense. I mean, if what you're saying is true, and I think it is, he should have just said, "No, we don't sit guys to start games. Like we want to let you know, we want to come out and execute each week and be."
He did say that. He said we're trying to practice and build momentum, and hopefully we'll play better in this game and then better in the next one. He said that.
If Tua comes out and he gets hurt, especially if he gets hurt without even really running in, like taking a big shot, this is on Nick Saban.
All right.
I mean, he's made mistakes before. I know he's the best at it, but he still screws up.
If he gets hurt and the score is close, I disagree. If he gets hurt and they're up by 50, yeah, that's his fault. When he got hurt against Tennessee, like that was on Saban. You should have pulled him by that point.
But the score's not going to be close against – I mean, you can kind of see the future.
It'll be close when the game starts, buddy.
Yeah, but they're not going to lose, so you could go ahead and assume that at this point –
I'm saying if he gets hurt on, like, the first series, that's not Saban's fault. That's just bad luck. But he's healthy enough to play. He's not out there on a broken leg. He's clearly healthy enough to play. Thusly, he will play. That's all Saban's saying. Now, the question is, what's the threshold at which they pull him out? Is it 21? Is it 28? Is it 35? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess...
I don't know what even we're talking about. Who gives a damn? It's Alabama.
Good point. Final segment, hour two. It's brought to you by Einstein Bros. Bagels Coffee, the official coffee of 3 and Out. It's 100% caribou coffee, and it is delicious. Pick you up some today with your bagels. Bagels and coffee just go together. Get it together with Einstein Bros. Bagels. Houston, as we were talking about Nick Saban, it reminded me that Les Miles and LSU finally agreed on a buyout amount. They owed him $6.5 million.
He didn't want it?
He settled for 1.4, I believe, right?
Took a lump sum of 1.5.
Hmm. Why? Why would he do that?
I don't know. I don't get it.
Did he get any other perks to offset the millions of dollars he left on the table?
I wonder if
season tickets for life or.
Well, they were paying. They owed him $9 when they fired him, and they've paid him the $2.5 over time since he was fired. So I guess he was just. I mean. If he has offset language, is this a sign that like Les Miles will be stalking the sideline next year somewhere? And he's saying, give me 1.5 now, and then whatever I make with my next deal next year won't be offset because it would have counted either way. You see what I'm saying? Like if he gets a job next year making $2 million, then he doesn't get $2 million from LSU. He just gets $2 million from his new school. So now he takes 1.5 now. Severs his LSU ties and now just makes his money with the next job. I don't know.
Still, why would you do that?
I don't know. Maybe the payments were diminishing in how much he was getting paid, per month or per quarter, or however it was structured with that. But Joe Oliva just said it's time for both parties to move forward. One of the challenges of the buyout that was in place was there just wasn't a lot of incentive to move on to other things. We were looking to provide that, and Coach Miles and his representatives were also ready. So it kind of hints at maybe Les is getting the old itch. Coaching carousel is about to fire up.
No doubt.
We talked about Louisville yesterday. Yep. And Jeff Brohm, it got reported last night, or I guess yesterday afternoon, that, I mean, it was like in detail. And it was a basketball guy who threw it out there and said, Jeff Brohm will be announced as Louisville's head coach on November 26th. Like, called the day and everything.
Brohm has denied it, by the way.
Yeah.
As he should. But still, it's kind of funny.
I mean, I guess you can deny it, and then if it happens, say, yeah, well, it happened. But
it changed later.
Right. It wasn't a done deal when that guy said it was a done deal. It just became a done deal at that point moving forward.
Hmm. Well, maybe. I don't know. Sure. Les Miles back in it. I mean, the guy loves to coach. Why not?
And, speaking of coaching.
And nothing else he's really done since being fired at LSU has – worked. I wanted him to go to game day and replace Corso. That would have been ideal. No offense to Corso. I think it's probably just time, maybe past time. But they didn't do that. They gave him like a podcast or something with SEC Network. He comes on occasionally here and there to do. I mean, they They could have utilized him more, and they didn't. And so now he's probably like, well, this all stinks. I just want to coach football again. Go for it. Go do it. I'd be interested to see what type of school would want Les Miles. Like, would Purdue, if Brom does leave, like, is Purdue a place Les Miles could go? Does that make sense?
Kansas.
Ugh.
No. They have been talking about that.
No. Come on. Don't do that to Les. They would make Kansas a lovable figure.
I could
get more eyeballs on him, at
least. I could see Purdue going and getting Luke Fickell at Cincinnati.
Okay.
And then Cincinnati's opened.
Go on. Les to Cincy?
No.
Butch
to Cincy.
Come on. Get out. Come on.
Les Miles met with Kansas Athletic Director Jeff Long last week.
And said, no, I'm not coming to Kansas. It's not the coaching, and you keep firing these guys. No way. No one can fix this place until you do something about it.
Long and Miles know one another from their time at the University of Michigan in the late 1980s and early 1990s.
Would he dare?
Yeah.
Oh. No, would Les Miles go to Kansas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? You guys really think he'd take that job? It's the worst job in football. Worst Power 5 job easily.
People said that when Mike Leach went to Washington State. Now look at him.
No, Washington State has a history of winning. They won when they had Leak. Or
Kansas?
Who am I thinking of?
Wasn't Kansas like a top 10 team with, what's his face?
Who was the guy that came out with Peyton? What was his name?
Ryan Leaf.
Ryan Leaf.
Leaf. God, I said Leak and couldn't get
Leaf.
I thought
you were going for a coach.
Like, they were good. They would have won a national championship if they beat Michigan that night.
They had Drew Bledsoe as well.
Leaf. Washington State has a history. Hell, even Washington has a history. Kansas doesn't have a history. They've got no tradition of winning. They have no tradition except losing. That's the tradition.
I think people overrate Les Miles's resume to these programs. Like, I don't think big-time programs are knocking down the door to hire Les Miles.
They're not.
I don't either.
I mean.
So maybe Kansas is the only place he can go and he's itching to coach? Go for it, man. Sure. Go. Go to Lawrence, Kansas. Enjoy yourself. A lot of grass there he could eat, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, there's nothing
Prairie
else
land.
There. One thing we haven't talked about that, by the way, speaking of coaches, any thoughts or feelings on Dooley coming back in this weekend? I think he'll be in the booth, so it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm sure if they win, there'll be some soundbite from him after the game. He has shaved the beard completely. I've got some numbers we'll talk about to start hour number three about what Drew Locke has done against SEC teams,
uh-huh.
And it's very Tyler Bray-ish. Look at all these numbers he puts up. He must be great, and then he plays SEC defenses and things change. I don't know, maybe do we feel differently about Dooley than we do Butch? Like, did we realize that Dooley was just kind of a jerk who was in over his head, but at least he's admitted it since then? Like, because Dooley has admitted, I made a lot of mistakes at Tennessee. I wish I had it to do over again, but that's part of it. Are we kind of like, oh, okay, Derek, you're fine. We don't forgive you for what you did, but you're not the villain. Whereas Butch Jones, and it's just so close that it's still the villain. Because people hated Kiffin at first, and now everyone loves Kiffin. People hated Dooley at first, and now people are okay on Dooley. But obviously, the hate of Butch Jones is still very, very real. But is there any, what's your emotion about Derek Dooley coming back in this
Indifferent.
Week?
I will always hate Butch Jones forever. Derek Dooley, I feel like, is a guy that is kind of spoiled, thinks he can do it without putting in the work others mm-hmm. did, definitely made mistakes here, but at least has some perspective on success and failure, and I can at least appreciate that and on some level forgive him for it. Butch Jones is a psychopath. I can't forgive him.
That's a little harsh, isn't it?
I don't think so.
All right.
I think people that know the truth. And the way he acted after Alabama, I think, proved it. We'll hit those stats on the flip side. It's fascinating and goes to this Missouri-Tennessee matchup tomorrow.